Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. And I'm getting all my buttons pushed here so that I know what I'm doing. But anyway, the topic this morning was going to be Hebrews as we continue in chapter 7, I think it was, that we were working in. And it shifted over to the concept of repent, which I talk about all the time. And of course, that's where most of the Gospels began, with this idea of John the Baptist, Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ telling the apostles to, you know, repent and to seek this kingdom of God, which is at hand, and seek the righteousness of God. And so we went through a lot of different parts of the Bible, and we went through Peter, 2 Peter chapter 2, and it talks about people coming in as ministers and deceiving you. And, you know, it's the old wolves in sheep's clothing kind of things. And, you know, they talk about damnable heresies and everybody getting deceived and being fooled and brought into bondage. He's using these words that you're going to become merchandise and brought into bondage. And it sounds pretty bad. And the pig is going to return to his mire and the dog is going to return to his vomit. And everybody's going to be entangled again in the elements of the world. And, you know, nobody seems to quite get what that's all about, because they don't understand what the early church was really doing and what was going on in history at that particular time. And so in these other shows, we were talking about that, what was going on in history and what was being done at that time in the world. And the world was the system of government that we know as the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire was originally a republic about 500 years before. Actually, it goes back even 700 years. There was evidently some sort of massive flood at one time that came ashore and just devastated the Romans. And they moved their city inland into this area that is known today as the Seven Hills, which is where we find Rome. And they rebuilt. And the flood may actually, or this shifting where, you know, water come in from sea, some sort of tidal wave and everything. Geologists have gone back and tried to figure out what period of time was this and what was actually going on. But they moved it back to this area of Seven Hills and they built a new civilization. They began this rebuilding partially with a period of time that was revolutionary. There were people who were in charge at that time, and they were called the Tarquinian Kings, and they had a system of government, and the people found it oppressive, and the people got together and threw off the Tarquinian Kings. Now, whenever you take down a governmental system in history, you have to have something to replace it. And many countries have done this, where they've overthrown some dictator or ruler or regime, and when they overthrew that regime, they replaced it with a new regime that was worse than the first regime. You know, it's kind of like they threw out the kings of France, you know, chopped off the head of Louis and Marie Antoinette, and then, which was immediately followed by a dictatorial bloodbath that caused the death of thousands and tens of thousands of Frenchmen and got them involved in one war after another where thousands and thousands more died. And it devastated society. And of course, after that devastation, you know, people began to start rebuilding and everything. But it wasn't the wars. It wasn't the new government. It wasn't the revolution that saved them. The American Revolution was notoriously bloodless. It was just amazingly bloodless. Now, many people died in it. Many people suffered, mostly from the elements. Clark's march across the frontier, and he took fort after fort, that was taking most of those forts without killing any of the enemy. They would shoot at the fort and they would keep them pinned down for a period of time. Eventually they realized it was better to surrender than to be pinned up in the fort, and they surrendered. But they took great pains not to kill anybody. Fort Ticonderoga, taking it, nobody was killed. it was really, you can't say it was a bloodless revolution because there were battles, Bunker Hill, and many people died. And the English, the British, and the Hessians, they were certainly trying to kill us. And at times we were killing them. And we kind of had this tendency to pick on the officers and not pick on the enlisted men. Many of the Hessians who were fighting us during the American Revolution actually stayed. They never, when they, their enlistment was up, they didn't go back. They actually stayed in America and proved up land. They kind of liked the ideas that were going around back then. One of the problems, though, is today, most Americans are unaware of what was going on back then. They don't understand what this whole thing was about of settling America. They have the idea that people were coming here for free land. No, they were coming here for land that was free, not free to buy. I mean, it cost them their lives. It cost them a fortune to prove up land. You had to clear trees and plow it, and it took oxen and equipment, and so it was expensive, and you were a long ways away from trading places, so markets had to be opened up. Yet people came and proved up land because they actually wanted to own the land themselves. You see, you could get land in England, you could get land in Europe, but you couldn't own the land. You would have to pay a tax on the land. And whenever you have to pay a tax on the land, that's because you don't really own the land. You own like a legal title. And if you own a legal title, you don't own the beneficial interest, because the beneficial interest is not included in a legal title. That's the law. Now, you probably don't know that either, because they're not teaching you that in the school. You can actually look it up in Black's Law Dictionary, and we quote it in the book Covenants of the Gods in the chapter on law versus legal, and explain all this out, that you don't actually own the land, that you're actually tenants upon the land. You don't own your labor anymore. We also explain that in the book Covenants of the Gods. You're actually back into the bondage of Egypt. See, because the dog has returned to his vomit and the pig to his mire. You have again been entangled in the elements of the world, and you've gone back into bondage. Now, for the last 100 years or so, they've been telling you, no, you're free. This is the freest country in the world. And in the last 50 years, they've been telling you that it's a democracy. And, of course, it really isn't a democracy. It's a republic. And that's what it was originally. But in the republic, there is a thing called democracy. And that's what you're a part of. And you're back in this bondage again of the world. And you're entangled again in the elements of the world, just like the Bible is talking about. And you are surety for debt, which the Bible warns you over and over again not to be surety for debt. And yet, there you are, being surety for debt. And you don't own your labor, you don't own your land, you don't own your children. And all this is the absolute antithesis of one of the great motivators for many people to come to America. And the reason they were motivated to do this is because they had been reading and translating the Bible, and they were beginning to realize what liberty was and what freedom was. And coming here to America, they really had to take a crash course in this. When they first came here, they actually tried to create kind of socialist state in, the Pilgrims did this, Jamestown did this, and, you know, from each according to his ability and to each according to his needs. And people were starving. Every year, the people starved under that rule. The year they decided, no, you grow it, you produce it, it's yours. Nobody has a right to take any of it away. Capitalism, the private ownership of property. The interesting thing is, people like the Pilgrims were actually coming here to own land in fee simple. They actually wanted to own the allodial title of land. You know, I'm actually writing a book on this subject, and it's, I have another one I have to finish before I finish that one. But they were going through great, and you talk about your conspiracies, there was all kinds of things going on behind the scenes, not necessarily honest stuff that the Pilgrims were doing, in order to obtain land that would not be under the authority of the crown. And they had a very devious, complex plan in order to do this. And it was amazing, the courage of the people. And of course, half the Pilgrims were dead the first year they came. And so there was a great sacrifice. This cost them dearly. And thousands of people would die over the years to come in this struggle to settle the wilderness. It just was not working out, settling this wilderness. And yet, people kept coming, and kept coming, and kept coming. And their motivation was, is this hope of owning land. And the pilgrims eventually paid off the land and all their debts that they had. And that was actually kind of some ceremony to the whole event. And they paid it off with real money. And they owned the land. Now, they had turned down six contracts. They finally accepted the seventh contract with the company that they were supposedly doing business with to come here. And they were actually secretly doing business with their competition. But then that didn't work out. But we'll finish that story when I finish the book. But the point is that they eventually did own land where they owned it. They actually owned the beneficial interest of land. It could not be taxed by anybody. And there was a large number of people in America that could own land, and it could not be taxed by the government or anybody else because they actually owned the land. And this, according to the Oxford Dictionary, makes them freemen. They were trying to be freemen. And like I say, many men and women and their children died trying to get to the point where they would actually own land, because the definition of a freeman requires that you actually own the beneficial interest of land. It did back then. It did 100 years before that. It did 1,000 years before that. And it did it 2,000 years before that. It did it back in the days of Rome. They needed to own land as individual families, and that land could be passed down from family to family. No inheritance tax, no property tax, no tax on your labor, none of that. And that's what they threw out the Tarquinian kings in order to obtain. And that's partially why they moved their city, their community. I mean, their city back in those early days was pretty primitive, pretty rustic. And it wasn't the big marble halls that they would eventually build. But they began a new process with a new kind of government, and different than the form of government that they had under the Tarquinian kings. And they discovered what the secret of success, and the more successful they got, the more they forgot what made them successful. They lost memory, conscious memory, of what made them a great nation. And they became less than great and began to become corrupt and fall apart. Now, understanding exactly the process of this in history is very important, because history does repeat itself. They formed a republic. They didn't call it a republic at first. They made reference to it with an actual phrase, which in the Latin language is known as an idiom. And it used to be a common phrase. A lot of people knew about it. And it's almost completely disappeared from our vocabulary. I don't know that it's a conspiracy or anything, but it just disappeared. And the phrase was libera res publica. Libera res publica. And I still find it in documents on the European continent. And if you search it out on the internet, you'll probably find our website mentioning it. But it's the original idiom from which we get the word republic. And it's very interesting what a republic is. And now, those of you who are regular listeners know that we've talked about words like religion and faith and how they meant one thing 200 years ago. Somebody changed the definition and it became meaning something else 100 years ago. And then now it means something completely different than what it meant 200 years ago when the Constitution was written. It also means something completely different than it meant back in the days of Jesus Christ, when they translated a particular Greek word, threskia, into religion. That's what we translate into religion. And threskia actually means what you do. And at different times, it meant specific things that you do. And the Romans were doing them 500 years before Christ. And we would call their religion pagan religion, because we think they have a different opinion about who God was than we do. Because we think that religion is what you think about the Creator. You know, how you conjure up your image, draw your picture of the Creator. And that's religion. What the Creator that you draw and what you believe in, that's religion. But that's not what the definition used to be. It used to be how you fulfilled your duty, how you performed your duty, how you took on the responsibilities to God and your fellow man. That's what religion used to be. What you did told us what your religion was. It wasn't, you know, the cut of your hair, or clothes that you wear, or a crucifix around your neck, or, you know, where you went to church on Sunday or Sabbath. That didn't tell you what the religion was. What told us what your religion was what you did in relationship to fulfilling your duty to God and your fellow man. Now, an interesting thing is there were other cultures around at that same time that had this same idea, both at the time of Christ and 500 years before, at the time of Rome's beginning as a republic. And they knew that in order to bind their society together, they had two choices. They could elect another king, another Tarquinian king, who would exercise authority, and he would go out and collect taxes, and all the land of their nation would be under his authority, and he would take a portion of your crops, or a portion of your labor, and a portion of your property, and he would use it for himself, and the fulfillment of his duty, which would be to take care of the social welfare and protection. It usually starts with protection of their society. This is how Saul got elected. Saul was elected because they wanted a king like the other governments all around them. Now, Saul was getting elected long before the Roman Empire was beginning to become set up. So you would have to imagine that the people in Rome knew about Israel and how it operated before they set up their republic, when they were throwing out the Tarquinian kings. Those Romans, or those ones we call Romans, those Etruscans, they knew about Israel. They knew how it worked. They knew, actually, they probably had a better picture of how it worked than most of the people do today. Certainly, a lot of the people at the time of Christ. Because the Pharisees had it all wrong. They'd completely screwed it up. They had cloaked it in all kinds of religious mumbo-jumbo and blood sacrifices and fancy robes and golden temples and palaces, and had completely strayed from the precepts and pearls of wisdom that had established the kingdom of God amongst those sons who came out of Egypt with Moses. They had changed it all, and they didn't know what God really wanted them to do. And so when Christ came along and started telling them, they didn't recognize Christ as knowing the Holy Scriptures, as knowing the purposes of God, the doctrines of the prophets. Instead, they wanted to kill him. They wanted to, you know, put him down and mock him and all these kinds of things. They just, you know, some of them probably didn't want him killed, but they just don't want him out there causing trouble, because we got this cool thing where people go to church and they tithe to us, and the government has to take care of their needs, and they're all signed up for a system of Corban, which means sacrifice, that takes care of all our social welfare. And the priests of the temples, who used to be the poor preachers who actually took care of the needs of the people, were now wealthy, wealthy even beyond the king. And the same kinds of things were happening over in Rome, actually even earlier than Rome. But let's go back in history, back before the first king of Israel, which was Saul. And it says there were no kings in Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. And people always say, and that was a mess. Well, actually, we don't know a lot about that whole period of time. We know about the problems that came up, but that's because the bad news always gets the press. Most of the time, they weren't having troubles. Most of the time, nobody could even come near them. They were invincible. They were doing really good, and they were really prosperous. They didn't build big, huge temples and things with columns and all that kind of stuff, and stone walls and big city streets, but they were invincible as a people. They were strong. They were healthy. There were no cultures healthier than early Israel. The people, the stature and strength and character of the people was just absolutely amazing. But they also allowed strangers in the midst, and it brought in goofy ideas, and these ideas would contaminate the community, and they would get farther and farther away. And you could see different things that happened during this period where they got farther and farther away from what you might call righteous. So that some of the cities in, especially cities, now the countryside was much different, but in the cities where people gathered and everything and this commerce was going on, you would start to see this corruption of society raising up its head. It was still a pretty good place, but they got to a point where they became slothful in the ways of liberty, in the ways of the prophets, in the ways of men like Abraham, Moses, and John the Baptist, and Jesus Christ. And they said, let's have a king. Now, they had judges that were corrupt, and then you have to understand how those judges were elected, because the courts were from bottom up. But they had these judges that became corrupt, and they were letting people off the hook when they should have been, you know, held accountable for the evil that they did. And there's a way they do this, and they corrupt the priesthood. And how do they corrupt the priesthood? People begin to put the priesthood on a pedestal. They begin to turn too much over to them. And before you know it, some of them start getting bribes, and you don't want to alienate them. You don't want to say anything that might make them mad and go away, and so you start compromising character. Done all the time in churches today. Can't afford that. You got to speak the truth. This is what it means by seeking righteousness. Doesn't matter if a man's rich. Doesn't matter if a man's powerful. If he does wrong, you have to hold them to account. Doesn't matter if he's Billy Graham or Joel Osteen or let's think of some other people that aren't religious figures, you know, some political figure. If he's doing wrong, you got to call him on it. If he's doing wrong with his family, you got to call him on it. You know, but we don't do that anymore. It was a time when if there was any kind of a marriage scandal in the White House, that guy was toast. He wasn't going to be around. Nowadays, you can have all kinds of promiscuity, and everybody says, well, they even do this with their preachers. Preachers are caught doing terrible things, and they say, oh, well, he's only human. We have to forgive him. And they let him be their preacher. He can't be their preacher anymore. But anyway, let's go back to Rome. Let's take a look at Rome. What were they doing? They had to make a drastic change in the form of government from a kingdom, Tarquinian kings, and become this republic. So now they're replacing one government form with another government form. And the new government form is supposed to allow more freedom. How's this going to work? Well, fortunately, they had a number of disasters at that time. And, of course, then they had a civil war. And things were just a mess. And they moved to another place and started all over again. And all these things, over a period of time, began to change the way in which people looked at government. And they had a thing called hearths. And these were families and groups of families that would get together, small groups, and they would pick a minister, and that minister would tend to their needs as a small group, as a congregation, if you want. We use the word congregation in the old Hebrew, a synagogue, and they had similar words in the Latin, assembly, meaning assemblies of small family groups. But a small family group was a victim very quickly if a large group came in to rob and steal. So they had to have a way of connecting all these families, hundreds of families, over a pretty wide, extensive area. And so they picked, every 10 families would pick a minister. And that minister would get together with 9 ministers like himself, and they would pick a minister. And this created this kind of daisy chain network that allowed that if there was a problem in one area of the country, if there were Gauls coming down or Jutes coming down and invading, they would have this network of communications, network of aid, network of assistance, and like I say, information that would help bring a whole nation of people together. Now, why would you deal with that? Why would you keep those lines of communication open in times of peace? Well, even in times of peace, there are problems. Sometimes there's a thief in the area, and he's going to move to another area. And if you have this communication, you know, hey, this guy was the guy that was over in our area when all that stealing was going on. Or, you know, whatever it is. This guy's a con man. This guy's a liar. This guy's, you know, he's actually fronting for his buddies, and they're going to come and steal from you, and then they'll take all the stuff they steal, and they'll go to another place. And he's going around scouting for them, because he did the same thing in our community. See, or maybe it's disease, maybe it's a blight in your fruit trees or your orchards, and this is your health, education, and welfare guys. These got ministers. That's what they're doing. They're not just, you know, blowing smoke and talking beautiful thoughts about God and shaking rattles and beads and saying mumbo jumbo prayers and blowing smoke, burning incense. They actually provided a service to the community, and the community saw that they were of value. Same thing going on way up in what we call Germany today. Same thing going on way up in areas of Gaul, going all the way up into the Scandinavian nations. This is how people gather together. Now, they do it with lesser or greater elements of ability and to different degrees. And this often determines the success of society. But now, when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom, we're going to talk about how this translates into the success of Rome, and how they forgot about it, and it translated into the destruction of Rome. And then we'll talk about it in relationship to America and many other countries around the world, and how they collapsed and began to become corrupted. Their foundations decayed, and they fell too. Although they haven't completely fallen, all but hit the sidewalk. But anyway, we'll do that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom, right after these words.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me, and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. And we're talking about this whole Roman history thing where they became a republic. And, of course, if you ask a lot of people of today about America, they'll say America's a republic. And they'll say that America's a democracy. And the fact is, the idea of a democracy and a republic are really at different ends of the spectrum. They are completely different. I mean, if you go back, look at the early American forefathers, they're saying democracy is a bad thing, almost to the letter. They're all talking about democracy at one time or another as a bad thing. And it wasn't until just in the last 50 years, 60 years, that democracy became a good thing. And everybody talks about the United States being a democracy. And in truth, the United States always was a democracy. That's right. It always was a democracy. Now, I know I get a lot of arguments here, but you got to bear me out here. Now, it says in the Constitution that it was going to guarantee a Republican form of government. It didn't say it was a Republican form of government. It said it would guarantee a Republican form of government. It's a corporate form of government. It has its bylaws, its Constitution, and it was as foreign to the individual states almost as the states were as foreign to each other. And they state right in Clark's Summary of U.S. American Law that the states, even after the Constitution was put into place, were as foreign to each other as Mexico is to Canada. You were citizens of the individual states, which were republics to one degree or another. They weren't all pure republics, but a republic, the purity of a republic, depends upon the status of the individual citizen living on his own land in fee simple, untaxed by the government. And so you say, whoa, wait a minute, the government can't tax you? Can't tax you on your labor because you own it. Can't tax you on your land because you own it. You can't tax you on your children, can't take your children from you, because they belong to you. But that's not what you see anymore in America. You see another animal altogether, and that's what they talk about. If you go to that 2 Peter chapter 2, they start right off talking about false teachers and damnable heresies, denying that the Lord is the Lord, I mean the government. And they talk about them bringing in pernicious ways. And through what do they use? Feigned words to make you merchandise, human resources, collateral for debt, surety for debt, covetousness. They get you to want your neighbor's stuff. You want your neighbor to pay for what you want. This is the pernicious ways. And it goes in all the way down into verse 12, and he starts talking about natural brute beasts, that our nature thinks that's okay. We've been taught that's okay, and this is what's changed. And it changed in Rome, too, because, see, Rome, when they first started, they started building. They had to build again. Everything was new. And they got good at building, and they built, and people came up with new ideas. Why? Because they had this government that was a network. You'll see this on different radio stations, different groups. They form networks, and they, you know, the Internet is a great example, because it's being used to deceive people, but it's also, there's this underlying thing in the Internet where new information is going around. And they're throwing huge amounts of hay. It's a great distraction on top of this. And you have to filter through and find the good stuff. And what they were doing, because they had a system bound together where these 10 families loved each other, they depended on each other, they helped each other, they picked a minister, and he connected them with other 10 families. So they did this all across the country, so that if a family way on the other side of the Seven Hills was attacked, everybody would come to their aid. Why? Because they knew that they needed them to come to their aid if they were attacked. And so they go to theirs and hope that they come back to theirs. In other words, they give through faith, hope, and charity. They keep these avenues open, and they became more and more successful. Everybody learned better ways of farming. If one guy came up with an idea and then they shared that with their minister, he shared it with 10 other ministers and they shared it with 100 other ministers, and it got all around and everybody was learning constantly, innovatively, becoming better builders, better miners, better at agriculture, the Romans were good at taking information from anybody around them and turning it into value. And they became more and more successful. Working and earning your way, staying out of debt, was really important to the Romans. That's Sabbath. They understood that. So how did they do these big projects? Somebody discovers that there's gold up in where Spain is today, Hispania. And they want to go up there and mine it. Because they know a lot of good mining techniques because they have been in, everything's been improving because of this network. Everybody's been sharing. It's kind of like the Wikipedia principle. You know, everybody just does their share because they want to help each other. And all the people who want to help each other come together and they build something. They make it happen. So now they want to go way across country, miles and miles away from their homes, and mine where they found this gold. So they invest money. They take real capital, gold, that they already have, silver that they already have. Or they promise that they'll work. I'll go with you for 2 years up to this area and I'll work. I'll help you build this, help you protect this. And they have the tens, hundreds, and thousands already, so they have their captains and their lieutenants. So they just gather together and, you know, they get a couple of young men from this family and a couple of young men from that family. And you know, some have to stay back and do the work and protect the community. But they all go up. So every family's investing something, money, resources, everything. And they do this through what we ended up calling temples. Like the Temple of Janus and Temple of Saturn. And these weren't buildings originally. This was an area. This is where their altars were. And they went there and everybody invested in this with real capital. Sometimes with time and effort as well. They do that on board ships and stuff like that still to this day. Anyway, they invested and they went up and they mined this mountain in northern Spain. And they dammed up rivers and made lakes. And they got local help to help them, and they paid them, and they all carried swords. These were your centurions. They all, because they were both soldiers and builders. They were actually builders and on the side soldiers. You were more likely to build something as a centurion than you were to pull your sword in battle throughout the history of Rome. That's the way it was for a long time. Towards the end, it was a little bit different. But so they're going out. And they build these lakes, and they build these runways, and they dig these canals, and they start making mines into the mountain, and they just dig these small holes, but then they divert the water into the holes and start washing the, and they literally remove the whole mountain. And they came away with tons of gold, tons of gold. And it came back, and everybody divided up shares, and everybody was rich. And they did this time and time again. They did it with harbors. They did it with routes to trade routes. They are always figuring new ways to make a success, build. They built roads that are still in use. They built, you know, lead-lined whole lakes to create hot baths. And they built 3-4-story aqueducts out of poured concrete still here. Just amazing what they did. And they were able to do this because they started with the tens, hundreds, and thousands based on voluntarily helping one another. When they created anything like hospitals or buildings or anything, it was all free will offerings, free will offerings. They didn't tax the people. They couldn't tax the people, and they didn't tax the people for a real long time. But then they began to centralize. Even the Senate had no power to tax the people. It was just called the gathering of old men. They were a council. They couldn't pass new laws. The laws already existed. They already had their system of courts, which was the tens, hundreds, just like ancient Israel. They had all that in existence. But then they began to forget about it because they had built these palaces and these successes and brought in all kinds of other people that were working for them, and we call them slaves. They weren't really slaves. They were employees. And they had laws protecting them, and then they had to give them more and more rights because the people weren't doing the work. They were having other people do the work. And now that nobility took a long time to die out in Rome. And there were many of those noble people around in our series on the Romans. The Epistle of the Romans point out that there were these Romans who heard the gospel and said, that's what we used to do. That's what we used to do in Rome before we became this imperial dictatorship. And they wanted to get back to that. And some of those people want to get back to that, happen to be nephews and half-brothers to guys like Paul, the apostle. And Paul was beginning to realize, oh, I've been listening to the Pharisees in this false religion, all this mumbo-jumbo, and my nation has now gone into bondage. The dog has returned to his vomit and the pig to his mire. And he says, and all of a sudden he realizes Christ does have the answer. Took some spiritual intervention to knock him off his high horse. And I think it will take that with a lot of people today. They think they believe. They don't believe. They don't even know what was going on. Christ was teaching this same system. And Christians started doing it. Rome was still there. Judea was still there. Now, Jesus was declared King of the Jews by Rome. And so the church was actually operating the government of the people, for the people, and by the people, based on not taxation, but tithing, free will offerings, to take care of all the social welfare needs of the people through faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. This is what they were doing. They wouldn't take the benefits from the temples that had grown up. Now, the original temples, remember, operated by faith, hope, and charity. The original temples before Herod, and even way back with Saul, originally operated by faith, hope, and charity. Who forced the first contribution, forced the first sacrifice, forced the first tax on the people in Israel? Do you know when that was? That was Saul. He forced an offering. It says that. He forced an offering. He needed money to supply the army, and he was afraid that they might attack before he was ready, and so he forced an offering. That's what it says. Forced a sacrifice. Offering, sacrifice, same thing. And Samuel came in and said that he had done this wicked thing, and because he did that, his kingdom would not stand. Everybody does that now. So how do you figure your kingdom, your government's going to stand as long as you do it? You don't know how to live by faith, hope, and charity. And that's what John the Baptist was preaching, to make straight the way of the Lord. The way of the Lord is to gather together and create a society in the world, but not of the world, that operates by faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty, and bind yourselves with other people by love. You think you can do that? You can't do that alone. You got to do that with other people. You know, you can't be, you know, I could put some terms here, but you can't do that alone. You've got to gather with other people, not for the purpose of them serving you, but for the purpose of you serving them, because you're not going to get blessed unless you come in the name of Christ, and Christ came to serve, so therefore you have to serve. You see how that works? But instead, what's happened is you become natural brutes and you think it's absolutely okay to take from your neighbor by force so that you can have a health clinic or welfare or food stamps or whatever it is. Like I say, health care, social security, public schools, all these things of socialism. You think it's okay to force your neighbor to contribute to this. And that's the nature of a brute beast. Take what you want. But these, as a natural brute beast, made to be taken and destroyed. You see, because you'll be taken. That whole thing with Proverbs and sinners enticing, say, let's all have one purse, and let's lurk privately for blood. This is what they're talking about. And they tell you that it's not going to be their blood that's taken, it's going to be your blood. And now you're feeling the sting of this error in your thinking, that it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods through government. And you're wanting to throw off that government. Well, you can't throw it off without destruction and devastation to your society and your community unless you have something to replace it. And that's why John came first, to start telling you make straight the way of the Lord. He said, same way with Moses. Pay your tally of bricks. But glean in the field at night for your straw. Start gathering together with other people. I can guarantee you, the first people you gather together with, they ain't got this. They ain't got it down. But if they are willing to gather and work it out, start learning, practicing, then get better. You know, first time on the ski slope, I was pretty bad. So I invited a buddy to come with me. And he was pretty bad too. At the end of the day, he was good. I mean, he wasn't good skier, but he was a tremendous athlete, and he was coming down those hills lickety-split. He's crashing into things still, but he just fell in love with it, became a real avid skier after that. I did get better, but I never got as good as he did, but I probably didn't break as many bones as he probably ended up eventually breaking either. But the fact is that you do these things together, and you'll get better at it. And that's why you're to gather together in Christ's name, how to serve one another. Can you imagine 100,000 people, 200, a million people in this country of 360 million people, and they're all trying to outdo each other in ways to help you? That doesn't mean they just give you everything you want. If you don't work, you don't eat. And they rebuke you when you do wrong. But they're trying to live by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. They're trying to provide health, education, and welfare through charity alone. They're trying to be the Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary, the FEMA of the righteous, by coming together and resolving problems. You know, how do you grow a garden? How do you grow a garden without GMOs? How do you grow wheat without GMOs? Who wants to do that? Because if you want to do that, we want to buy wheat from you, because we don't want GMO wheat. Well, how are you going to find those people unless you get into a network? And that's why we got thelivingnetwork.org. But you have to work at it. Those Romans started with nothing. They had to work at it, and they built it, and they built it. Hundreds of years went by, and they were invincible, just like Israel had once been invincible when they organized the same way, tens, hundreds, and thousands. And the Teutons, when the Romans went up against them, 12,000 Teutons defeated 15,000 Roman soldiers in just a few days, to the man. Why? Because they were organized in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, and the Romans were forgetting what made them great. They still had, you know, better equipment, and they had, you know, all this stuff, but they had forgotten what made them great. America has forgotten what's made us great, what made it great. You see, when they came to the wilderness, they had to defend each other. They had to back up each other. When there were shortages, they had to help one another, but they knew they had to do it by free will choice. When they tried to do it through government imposition of rules from each according to his ability, to each according to his need, they starved. We're back at it again. When they said, no, when a man makes, you know, grows corn, it's his corn. When he makes something, it's his. His house is his. When they said that, starvation stopped. And that's the testimony both in Jamestown and in the places where the pilgrims were settling. And they both decided the same thing at the same time, miles apart, with no communication with cell phones, but a collective consciousness was awakened by the hardship of half the people dying every year. They came face to face with the reality that if we don't do it that righteous way, we are doomed. And we've forgotten that. And we are doomed. But there's good news. Bad times coming. That's the good news. The bad times are coming. Because it's going to knock you off your high horse. And it's going to wake you up. And right now, we're looking for those people who are waking up without getting knocked off their horse. They're waking up because something in them is stirring. Some of them have had a hard time of it. But something is waking them up. Somebody's writing on their hearts and their minds, and they're deciding to come together in the perfect law of liberty, with faith, hope, and charity. And all we're doing with the livingnetwork.org is trying to connect them up and show them some of the ways of the ancients that made nations free. And it's because they come in the character of the prophets, in the character of Christ, in the name of Christ, come to set others free. And by that, they themselves will be free. They are willing to lay down their lives for others. And if we're willing to do that, we will have life more abundant. If we're willing to make the sacrifices necessary for taking back our responsibilities to one another and caring for the needy amongst us. If you're going to do it well, you're going to have to organize yourselves from the bottom up. I'm not going to appoint men over the top of you. Don't have any power to do it. Don't have any interest in doing it. Don't want to do it. You have to form your congregations. You have to make sure you pick ministers who connect you with the other congregations. You have to do it. Because if you're not willing to do it, you're not an asset to our society. Because our society operates by faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. You want to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare? You go out and talk to those natural brute beasts who love to do that. But it will be your blood that will be taken. You will be destroyed, made to be taken and destroyed, because you decided to go the way of covetousness. So anyway, I encourage everybody to start connecting on a local level with other people that are starting to turn around and see what we can do. And then when there's a blizzard in South Dakota, we'll have more people calling instead of the few that we did have calling. Everybody was okay. Everybody got through it okay in our network. But there were a lot of other people that were devastated, but they're not in our network. They need to be in our network. And we'll help them rebuild, and we can find people that will help them do that. We can move people around to help them do that. The public servants of the kingdom of God want to do that. And they do it based on faith, hope, and charity. We have missionaries on the road right now helping people. We need more. We need not lots more. Where are we going to conjure those up? Don't wait for us to build it and then you come. You come and help us build it, and you'll be there already. Because it's in the building that made Rome great. It's in the building that made Christianity. Because they sought the kingdom of heaven and the righteousness of God, they were blessed by God. But if they don't go that way, then there's nothing more I can do for them. Because the slothful should not eat. And that's why, you know, everything we have on the net, it's there for free. You can download the books, download the audios, hundreds of audios, and the videos, you can download them. But that doesn't get you anywhere. You might learn something, that'd be good, and that's why we offer them. But unless you are actually gathering together in the name of Christ to help others, you will not receive the blessings of Christ. You will not be able to gather together enough. You're not smart enough. You're not able enough to make the real difference. But if you will do that, your Father will run out halfway and you will find talents that you did not know you had. You will be given powers you did not know were accessible. You will be given a new life because you're willing to lay down some of your life for others. That's the principle. Romans learned that. They learned it in the hard way with natural disasters and throwing out the Tarquinian kings. Early Americans did it, standing for righteousness against an evil empire that was trying to foist an unwarranted usurpation. You have to remember, they were already free. Most of those men were already landed men, owning their own land, owning themselves, because that was the deal when they came here. They were still in a minority, but in that minority, they made the difference. Most of the people were in favor of Britain. Thousands, 50,000 Americans joined the British regiments to fight George Washington. But they still won because God was on their side. I can't say that about Americans today because they've gone a new way, a different system. And they've turned the whole world around and are going the wrong way. But anyway, we'll talk more about that next time on Keys of the Kingdom. Till then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.